Where's Chris Matheson going to play there? Remember, but,
yeah, he's coming.
Jai 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 Jai
Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Jayam Vishnu Pabam Sabadada Jagataya, Sisi Mabhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. All right, we're going to finish our discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna. We're in the middle of the tragedy on Devaki's wedding day. We have left off where Vasudeva, Devaki's husband, is trying to convince Kamsa, don't kill his sister, because there will be reactions in the future. And we ended up by discussing the power that is there in the mind. And how that power of the mind actually takes us to our next body. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yato yato dhavati daiva choditang manovakaratmakam apa panchasu guneshu maya ratiteshu dehaso prapadyamana sahatena jayate. Vasudev continues to speak.
At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. You all, as students and as professionals, are very concerned with the power of your mind. You want that your mind is focused. You want that all the hidden potential of your mind comes to the fore so that you may apply it in your occupation. But, as Vasudeva is explaining, the power of the mind also manifests in other ways besides in your academic work and in your professional work. The power of the mind takes you to another body. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the mind is the sixth sense. Manashasthan Indriyani. You have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, sense of touch, and you also have the mind. According to the Vedic system of classification, the mind is a sense because it feels things. With your mind, you think about something. You turn that something over in your mind. You feel it, and then you will to do something. And once you will with your mind, then the body acts, the gross body acts. You can see the effects in your everyday life. What happens when the mind becomes focused? Why do we not understand that at the time of death, the mind is also still active and it takes you to your next body? In other words, your next body is shaped according to your mental patterns in this life. Lord Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. Anchakala chamameva smara mukta kaleva. Whatever your state of mind is at the end of your life, that is the snapshot upon which your next body is built. You see, generally speaking,
the status of your mind, the snapshot of your mind at the time of death, is an accumulation of your mental states for your whole life, generally speaking. So, according to the laws of nature, how your mind is at the time of death will determine what kind of body you get next. Therefore, the intelligent person is thinking about progress not only in this lifetime, but also in future lifetimes. Why should we just be concerned with our welfare simply about the next few decades? What about your welfare after death and after birth again? That is what Vasudeva is telling Kamsa. Why should you kill your sister? That will be very bad for your welfare in the future. Now you have to ask yourself, why is it that your concern about your future is simply in this lifetime? Why not the next lifetime also? Why not make plans how to have the best kind of future in the next life? That is what Vasudeva is instructing Kamsa about. In other words, you have to be accountable for your mental strength. You will be held accountable by the laws of nature for what your mind is doing. It's not that you can just push your mind in this way and that way and not be accountable. You must be held accountable. You must be held responsible for the movements of your mind. You see, this human form of life is a special opportunity because the human body gives you the developed consciousness by which you can participate in a weekend like we're having now. You don't see the animals here sitting and listening attentively. No, only those spirit souls with the human body have the developed consciousness enough to sit and participate in this discussion. So on the one hand, the human body is a great benediction. It's a great opportunity because it permits a greater display of consciousness than other bodies. But on the other hand, we must not forget that the human body brings with it great responsibility. The human body is like a junction. You can go up or you can go down. Animals get no karma. Why? Because their consciousness isn't developed enough for them to be held responsible for their activities. But as a human being, your consciousness is developed enough for you to be held responsible for what you do, and therefore you will be held accountable. Just like every company, every corporation wants employees that understand they're held accountable. Often that word is used, accountability. We'll give you your chance, but you have to be accountable. So nature is doing that by giving you a human body. You have the opportunity with the human body, but you'll be held accountable. Therefore, if you just waste your human body on economic development and sensual delights, the laws of nature say you actually don't need a human body. By your activities, it can be seen that you actually don't want a human body. Better you take a non-human form. The human body is especially meant for understanding what is the soul, what is God. Other bodies are much better at material affairs. Other bodies are much better at eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The human body is not the best at those things. But the human body is the best at understanding what is the soul, what is the supreme soul. So if we misuse this human body, then the greatest tragedy happens. That is, we go down again into the animal species. And it takes so long to get another chance to come to the human form. This is what Vasudeva is trying to warn Kamsa of. What are you doing with your mind? If your mind persists in this horrible way, you'll get a horrible body in your next life. Now, what do devotees do in order to harness the power of the mind for the best possible purpose? Srila Prabhupada writes here. If the mind is engaged in bhakti yoga, by the grace of Krishna, one can very easily control it. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended one should chant the holy name of the Lord constantly, for the holy name of the Lord is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Person. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra constantly, one can fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Savayimana Krishna Padara Vindaya, and in this way achieve the perfection of yoga. Otherwise, the flickering mind will hover on the platform of mental speculation for sense enjoyment, and one will have to transmigrate from one body to another, because the mind is trained only in relation to the material elements, or in other words, to sense gratification, which is false. Now just think about your mind right now. Is it trained only in relation to material elements? That's certainly what you're dealing with in your various forms of engineering. Engineering means how to manipulate various aspects of nature, material nature. How to manipulate various material components. If your mind is only trained in that way, then this is a great tragedy. The mind is best used for focusing upon bhakti, Krishna consciousness. And then the real purpose of the world easily becomes manifest to you. You see the world as energy coming from the supreme source of all energy, Krishna. And you seek to use all the energy in the service of Krishna, rather than to appropriate all the energy for your service. That is the big mistake. I'm appealing to you all to please unlock the hidden potential of your mind for the highest purpose. Don't use the powers of your mind simply for mundane material purposes. You'll be held accountable for that. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness is a chance how to use your mind in the greatest possible way. So Srila Prabhupada writes, in conclusion, the Krishna conscious movement offers the topmost welfare activity for human society. The saner section of human society must therefore take this movement very seriously for the benefit of all humanity. To save oneself from the repetition of birth and death, one must purify his consciousness. One must be free from all designations. I am American, I am Indian, I am this, I am that. And come to the platform of understanding that Krishna is the original master and we are his eternal servants. When the senses are purified and engaged in Krishna's service, one achieves the highest perfection. So please think about that. Vasudeva is trying to convince Kamsa, don't ruin your next life. You'll get a body that will be full of suffering. Don't you understand that? Now, Vasudeva is trying so hard to save his wife. He's saying to Kamsa, Devaki, this poor girl is your younger sister. Actually, she's like your own daughter. She deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. Kamsa wouldn't soften. He was fiercely cruel. He could not be pacified. He was not afraid by the good instructions given by Vasudeva. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, whether in this life or the next. He didn't care. He simply was thinking, what's the best to do for my senses now? And that is the way current so-called civilization is. What's the best thing to do for your senses now? As we spoke yesterday, most of you have some restraint built into you due to your tradition and your family upbringing. But you have forgotten, or your families have forgotten, what's the reason for this restraint, for this moral responsibility. Therefore, the whole system must crumble because the central purpose has been lost. And the proof will be the children, your grandchildren. They'll be completely unaware of why they should be restraining themselves, why they should be acting with responsibility. It is the parents' job to equip the children with a full understanding of Sanatana Dharma, scientific understanding of God. Otherwise, your children are going to think, oh, we're spending so many years studying electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, IT. This is the real purpose of our intelligence. But understanding God, understanding Krishna, oh, that's just some folklore. They will not understand that the greatest arena for the intellect is understanding the science of God, Bhagavad Dharma. You have to show them that. You have to show your wives that. You have to show your children that. You have to be a Dharmapati, the leader of Dharma for your home. And your wife must be Dharmapatni, the companion in performing Dharma. Then you have civilization. Now Vasudeva is seeing that Kamsa is determined to kill his sister, Devaki. So Vasudeva thought to himself very deeply, considering the situation, how death is imminent. Death is imminent. Very dangerous situation. He thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. Now, notice that Vasudeva is not thinking, well, everything is predetermined, everything is predestined, why should I try so hard? No. He understands that he has to do his duty. He must protect his wife as best as he can. Not that he just sits back and says, oh, I guess this was meant to be. Now, we spoke this morning about how many people accuse Vedic culture, even current Indian culture, of being fatalistic. That everyone is thinking, oh, it's just my karma, I like this. Therefore, supposedly the people have no motivation to push ahead with great individualistic determination. They're simply thinking, my present condition is all because of my karma, that's the way it's meant to be, why should I work so hard? What will be. So modern materialists look down upon this attitude. They scoff at it. No, your destiny is in your hands. Life is what you make it. Pick yourself up from the lowest position. Rise to the highest position. It's all up to you. Particularly in the USA, this is the social gospel. That's why they have no social welfare system in the USA to speak of. They actually think anyone who's poor is because they don't want to work. They're lazy. If they want work, it's there. They want to be rich, it's possible. Then they'll point to some, you know, exceptional example. Look at Secretary of State Powell. He was just a poor immigrant, his family. Now look at him. He became the highest military general, then he became Secretary of State. Anyone can do it. They have this expression in the USA, only in America can this happen. Someone rises from the low position to the highest, only in America. So they point to these exceptions, and therefore they say, why are there poor people? Because they're lazy, they don't want to work. If they want money, it's out there, go get it. So then they look upon India and say, because these people believe in karma, they're dulled. They are made to be very Sluggish. They don't have that drive to get ahead, that drive to go to the top. The masses of people are like that. There are some exceptions, of course. But otherwise, the general truth is there. One famous European humanitarian, you might have heard his name, Albert Schweitzer, he said that the Vedas are world and life negating because of this karma knowledge. Freedom, according to them, means do away with any understanding that the past life has shaped this life. And think that you are completely free to generate your future right now. That is only half true. Now let us discuss the true understanding of predestination and karma, which is that at every moment you are experiencing the results of your past activities while at the same time you're generating freely your future. So both things are true simultaneously. You're suffering from predestination and your own current personal creativity simultaneously. Just like it can be predestined from the past that you are blind. So in that way, your past is shackling you. Due to activities in the previous life, now you are blind. But although the past is affecting you in terms of your current blindness, you're shaping your future creatively. Based on your blindness, still you have freedom to act in a way that you'll get future reactions. You could choose to be a blind singer or a blind beggar or so many things. Some blind persons go out and beg and they have made more money than a working professional. So, you have the shackles of the past, the chains of the past, and simultaneously you have the freedom to generate your future. Both things are happening at once. Now, the stereotype, or the classic prejudiced, biased idea of India, is that the masses of people are just laying around doing nothing, thinking it's all my karma, my present situation, there's no need to work. Yeah, there's no need to struggle very hard, because what will be, will be. Actually, that is true. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni. He explains, Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovida. For one who is actually a kavi, an actual smart person, he does not endeavor for anything that's available within this material universe, because he knows it comes to you automatically based on your past karma. In other words, you cannot get one drop more material happiness than is destined for you, and you cannot get one drop less. It's all coming to you by time. Time is forcing upon you the reactions to your past life's activities. Now, you might say, well, does that mean if I just lay around and do nothing, if I'm meant to be a millionaire, I'll be a millionaire? Yes, it does mean that. But, on the other hand, you can't just lay around and do nothing, because the modes of material nature are pushing you to act. As Krishna says in the Gita, Nahi kaschit chanamapi, chatu tishtrat chakarma krit. Everyone has to act, push by material nature. You can't just lay around and say, oh, it's my destiny, I'll get all the happiness in this way, so why should I? No. Passion is pushing you. Do something. So this illusion that people are just laying around doing nothing and waiting to experience their karma, that is not so. Everyone is doing something. You go to a village in India and people are working hard. It's not that they're just laying around saying, oh, karma is going to happen. So. This is what the Westerners think, though. They think. They're all just laying, you know, on the bank of the Ganga wearing a lungi, and, you know, waiting for, let's wait for the karma. That's what they think. No one can lay around doing nothing. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. The modes of nature are pushing you. Act, act, act. So even in villages, you see people are very active, you know, raising their families, growing food, and marrying their daughters. It's all going on in the village. Where is it that people are just laying around doing nothing? Even the beggars, they're working. They get out on the streets in Mumbai and beg. That's work. They come up to your car window. Yes, that's work. They're not just laying around. Oh, you all come to us. So where does this idea come from? It is a fact that you will not get one drop more material happiness than you're meant to get, and not one drop less. For example, let us say I have a headache. You have a headache. Yes, that pain is predestined. But suppose you take some aspirin. Have you changed your karma? No. The pain that you avoided by taking the aspirin will come to you another way. You can't escape the happiness or distress that is bound to you. This is the real understanding of karma. Now, the intelligent person, understanding this about karma, doesn't use his or her life simply to achieve material rewards, which are going to come automatically anyway. Still, you have to do something. You can't just sit back and say it's all going to come automatically. What should you do with this active nature you have? You should use it for the highest spiritual perfection. So therefore, the sadhus, the Vedic specialists, rather than just sitting around saying it's all karma, we're not going to do anything, and that way we'll be spiritually advanced. No. They're not endeavoring for material happiness. They are endeavoring for spiritual success. But the mundane vision is that you're not acting for material happiness, therefore you're lazy. No. Just because you're not acting for material happiness doesn't mean you're lazy. You can be acting fully for spiritual perfection, and you can be so active doing it. This Krishna consciousness movement offers the world of bhakti activities, how you can be so active but for the real thing. Why should you be so active just for material happiness to come to you automatically? Your material distress will come to you automatically. Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam gives that example. He says, material distress. How many of you have longed for material distress? Anyone? Give me distress. I want distress. No one's done that. Still the distress came. Similarly, your happiness will also come, whether you long for it or not. These are the dualities. Happiness, distress. No one prays for distress, it comes. Similarly, your happiness, your material happiness will come to you, whether you long for it or not. So the message of Sanatana Dharma, Krishna consciousness, is why should you get yourself worked up longing for material happiness when it's going to come anyway? Better you endeavor with great intensity to be Krishna conscious, which is beyond the laws of nature, beyond material happiness and distress. So Vasudeva was duty-bound to protect his wife. Regardless of whether the voice from the sky was right that her eighth child would kill Kamsa, Vasudeva still tried his best to save his wife because that's his duty. He didn't say, oh, it's predestined she'll have a child that will kill him, so I'm not going to worry about it. He's got her hair in one hand and the sword in the other, but it's predestined she's going to have a child to kill him, so I won't worry about it. No, he had a duty as a husband. And so he did his duty. He tried convincing Kamsa philosophically, but Kamsa didn't care about ruining his present life or the next life. So now, finally, Vasudeva is going to make a deal. He thought, if I promise to bring all my children that are born to Kamsa, I'll save the life of Devaki. In other words, he's going to tell Kamsa, all right, spare my wife, and whatever children are born from us, I'll bring to you for your disposal. Vasudeva thought, although it would be horrible for me to hand over my newborn children to this man, because he's fearful that number 8 is going to kill him. At least for now, I can save my wife, and then later we'll see what the future brings. Maybe you won't have any children at all. Or, indeed, maybe, as the voice from the sky said, maybe one of my children will kill him. So in either case, let me bargain. Let me plead for sparing her life now, and we'll see what the future is. So this is Vasudev being very intelligent. He's a Kshatriya, so he knows how to be crafty. He knows how to be tactful. So he's thinking in this way. I'll promise to deliver my sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save my wife. And then we'll see what the future brings. So he submitted that proposal to Kamsa. His mind was full of anxiety. Vasudeva's mind was thickened with anxiety. But because his wife, he was feeling such anxiety because his wife was facing such danger. She had the sword through her throat. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, Vasudeva externally smiled and spoke to him. He spoke to Kamsa in this way. He's using everything at his disposal to save the situation, even being diplomatic. Sometimes in this material world, when you're dealing with rogues, you have to be very diplomatic and duplicitous, very tricky. And that is not a fault. Prabhupada explains that point here. Sometimes one must act duplicitously. Duplicitously means in a tricky, almost cheating way. When you are in a dangerous position, as Vasudeva did to save his wife. The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. Vasudeva did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. This indicates that one may act duplicitously in an apparently false way for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. So finally Vasudeva says to Kamsa, O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you heard from the unseen omen, the unseen voice from the sky. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all into your hands. So this is a very liberal proposal he's giving to Kamsa. And Kamsa accepted it. He thought, this Vasudeva is a saintly person. He'll not lie to me. So even Kamsa, a demon, was relying upon the word of a saintly person. This Vasudeva is known everywhere for his true word. He's promised to bring me the children for my disposal. Okay, let Devaki go. I'm a reasonable person. We can learn many lessons from this account. We can understand the process of transmigration of the soul. We can understand that we have a great responsibility. When you think of responsibility, you just think in terms generally of, oh, I must pay my debts to my parents. I must pay any university debts. I must pay my taxes. I must pay my mortgage. But what about your spiritual debts? The fact that you are part of Krishna and you're living in Krishna's world. Even the material world belongs to Krishna. How are we going to pay those debts? If you don't become conscious of those debts, then you must get bad karmic reactions. Just like when you don't pay your water bill or your electricity bill, it's cut off. Similarly, if you don't honor your debts to Krishna, then you experience bad karma. Your benefits are cut off. This is what Vasudeva is explaining to Kamsa. Of course, Kamsa was not wanting to listen. So I hope this discussion has given you all some insight into how your life should be moving forward. So many of you are engineers. So my challenge to you is, how are you going to engineer your life so that you get the best possible results in this life and the next. Next life is a fact. Already in this life, your body has changed several times, yet your basic identity remains intact. So similarly, at the time of death, death is simply another change of the body. Your identity, the spirit soul, will remain. And you will take birth again, according to your activities in this life. This is why there is the restraint and the integrity taught in Vedic culture, which is still there in what is known as Indian culture now. It's all based on understanding that every action has a reaction. But there's even better reason for this culture of restraint and self-control. It is that such a kind of behavior makes it very easy to become spiritualized and to understand Krishna. That is the best reason. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Yesham tantikatam papam jananam punyakamanam. Only for those who have made a complete stop to papa, sinful activity, only they can understand Krishna. For others, it's very difficult. Therefore, the whole purpose of the Vedic culture of dealings of integrity, relationships of integrity, restraint, and self-control, the whole purpose is so that you can become qualified to understand Krishna. In other words, not just morality in of itself, for itself. No, that will never last. The whole purpose of morality is for understanding the origin of morality, Krishna. And Krishna is not easy to understand if we have not made a stop to sinful activity. Therefore, people often accuse Krishna of so many things. Oh, he was immoral with Karna. He was immoral in this situation, that situation. Without understanding that Krishna is the Ishwar Parma, Parameshwar. He's the supreme controller. He is Dharma himself. What he says, that is the path of Dharma. So you cannot judge Krishna according to Dharma when he himself is the origin of Dharma. Without living a lifestyle of purity, it's very difficult to understand Krishna. Therefore, in conclusion, the whole payoff of the Vedic system, the whole payoff of Vedic culture is that you can understand Krishna because you have lived a life of restraint and control and integrity. You become eligible, qualified. You become a candidate for understanding Krishna. The actual understanding of Krishna comes when you associate with devotees of Krishna. Then, because of your qualified lifestyle due to restraint and responsibility, you're like dry grass. And when you associate with the devotee, you get the spark. And when the spark hits the dry grass, big blaze. Whereas if you have lived a very sinful life, it's difficult to approach Krishna. It's difficult for that blaze to start when the devotee of the Lord associates with you. So this is the whole reason why it has developed the culture of restraint, responsibility, dealings of integrity. It's to qualify you for getting the understanding who is Krishna. And Krishna cannot be understood with our material senses. And especially, Krishna cannot be understood by those whose lives are drowning in sinful reactions. Please remember all this. All right. We'll take some questions, and then we're going to have our final kirtan. Yes.
Maharaj, why does it happen like for some people, the karmic reactions, they come instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like in their lifetime, whenever they do some kind of sinful reaction, immediately the bad reactions happen.
That's not the end of it though. That's the immediate reaction. Mm-hmm. But there'll be a future reaction also. For example, if you hurt someone and the police catch you, you'll get an immediate reaction. But that's not the end of it. The laws of nature will also give you a reaction in your next life.
And why does it happen like a person who gets the reaction but in the late life, in the next life?
That's the system. Because this life is already packaged. You're a done deal in this life. All your happiness and distress is already pre-packaged into your body for this lifetime. You can simply change the way you're going to get your due material happiness. But the amount is already predetermined. You might say, oh, I was getting my happiness from playing golf, but now I want to drop that, I want to play cricket and enjoy that way. So you can change the way, but not the amount.
Can we also change the predetermined happiness also?
Change the what?
Can we also change the predetermined happiness also?
The what?
Predetermined happiness.
Period of?
Predetermined.
Predetermined, yes.
Can we also change that?
No. Only in Krishna consciousness can you change that. Bhakti is above the laws of karma. That's why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, what does Lord Krishna say? Sarva dharmam pricchaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam papasarvebhya mukshayishyami majucha. Krishna says, surrender to me and I'll deal with your karma. That's the only way out of the system. So those who are fully practicing Krishna consciousness, they are out of the clutches, the grip of karma. They experience a little bit of their past karma. It's just like when you pull the plug out from an electric fan. The current has been stopped, but the fan turns based on its past momentum. Still, the power's off. So you may see that devotees apparently go through some difficult situation, but you have to recognize the current, the electrical current, the plug has been pulled. It's just due to the past momentum. And gradually it will just slow to a complete halt.
So it implies that you can change our destiny by changing the karma?
Krishna consciousness is all about changing your destiny, right?
Okay.
Exactly. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is beyond the laws of karma. Just by you coming here for this weekend, you have totally adjusted your karmic situation. Any activity done for Krishna's pleasure is beyond the laws of karma.
Maharaj, I read in a book that...
Which book?
I'm just asking you, I don't know that actually the name of this book. But I'm asking you that Sati Mata told to Mahaprabhu's devotees that he will come twice in this world again. Is that true or not?
Which book you have read this in?
I'm sorry, I can't. I forgot the name, but I read in a book.
Twice in this world, in which way?
In a world of man, he will come again too.
You have to present a little more clear than that. You don't know which book you're reading?
It is a Bengali book.
Oh.
But I forgot the name.
I see. Alright, if you want to understand Lord Chaitanya,
yeah.
We have Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah.
You read Bengali?
Yeah.
Alright, so you can read. Here it is. There's the Bengali and the English. Then you get the authorized version. Otherwise, you know how Bengali is.
Yeah.
Krishna says that he knows the past, present and future.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we are given the free will. So this is like self-contradictory. If it's already been destined, and we still been given the chance that we will be given free will.
No. Krishna knows what you'll do, but he doesn't interfere.
It's the same thing.
Just like you may have a little brother who's 4 years old. You may know what he's going to do. That doesn't mean you have caused it. Why is knowing what someone's going to do the same as causing that person to do it?
I know that he will do, but I don't know that he will do it definitely.
Huh? Well, that's the difference between you and Krishna.
That's what my point is.
No. Krishna just knows what you're going to do with your independence.
But he knows the future for perfect.
Yes, he knows what you are going to choose to do. That is God. You're thinking in terms of yourself. Krishna knows what you're going to choose. At the same time, he doesn't force you. That's being omniscient. That's being all-knowing. Let me try to give you a material approximation. It's like your wife is electrical engineer?
Telecommunications.
All right. She knows that if a system is acting a certain way, it's going to result in a certain kind of future. Similarly, Krishna is the biggest scientist. He knows that according to the desires you have, this is how it's going to turn out. He's not forcing the situation, but he knows. Because you have these kind of desires, because you have these kind of thoughts, this will result. What's the big deal? You are engineers, you're scientists, you pride yourselves on understanding. If the system is like that, then this will happen in the future. Yeah. So, Krishna is a supreme scientist. He's a supreme engineer. What's the big deal? We think we're so mysterious and we're so complicated. But for Krishna, we're very simple. It's very easy to see.
But if Krishna knows that this particular action is going to be resulting into a bad result for me, then can't he guide us to do it in a proper way so that I don't get that bad result?
Yes, he's always doing that. That's why you're here this weekend. So will you take the guidance? He speaks Bhagavad Gita. Will you take it? He's giving you the holy name. He gives himself as the Hare Krishna mantra. Will you take it? Anything else? Yes.
If somebody is not a great devotee of Krishna, but does good enough karmas in his present life, what happens to that person in the next life?
If you're doing good karma, punya, pious activity, then you can go to the heavenly planets, the higher planets in the material world. Or you can take birth on earth as Bill Gates. Or you can take birth as one of the Beelas. And then you're flying in your plane and it crashes. And that's the end of enjoying your fortune. You can take birth as one of the Beatles and have so much fame. And then one of your own fans comes up to you with a gun and kills you.
And that sounds like a nice thing to happen.
Right, so therefore, better not to perform pious activities, better to perform bhakti, so you don't take birth in the material world again. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So what happens in that? Like, when you go out of that cycle of birth and rebirth, what happens after that?
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? He says that you go to him. You go to the spiritual world. Prasthasmatubhavam yaktasanatana. There's another world besides this world of birth and death. You go there, to the spiritual world, where there's no matter, there's simply pure spiritual consciousness. This is all explained in detail in Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam takes the themes of Bhagavad Gita and expands upon them. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you a hint. In Bhagavatam, all the hints are expanded upon. So you have to educate yourself about the spiritual world. The material world is the home of the material body. The spiritual world is the home of the spiritual body, the spirit soul. You have to find out these things. Yes?
What will we do there?
There is a saying called hands that serve is holier than lips that pray. Is that true? My question is, like, people like Mother Teresa or people like who always chant the name of God, who do you think better person regarding karma?
Who sets the standard?
No, I'm just asking you.
No, I'm asking you. Who sets the standard?
Krishna.
Right. And what does Krishna say? I don't know.
Especially in this one, I don't know, because I read something about this one said in a trip from the lines in the Mahabharata, like hands that serve.
It's yours in the Mahabharata?
I'm not sure about
that. There's so many slogans in India. Most of them turn out to be political slogans. Hands that work are better than lips that pray. Vote for me. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the definition of a Mahatma, great soul. Atma means soul. Maha means great. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritamashrita. The great soul is the one who is absorbed in bhakti yoga, who has taken complete shelter of the spiritual energy. That is the Mahatma. So that's the standard, to take complete shelter of Krishna and devotional service. In bhakti yoga, the hands are working and the lips are praying. You understand? What about the devotees who organize this retreat weekend? Their hands are working to provide this for you, and their lips are praying and chanting at the same time. And their engineering brains are working, planning the logistics. Okay? So you can also do that. And then you will be amongst the best.
This is must to have Guru.
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? You want me to give you my opinion?
Yep.
No, you should not want my opinion. If I give you my opinion, I'm cheating you. My only value is that I give you Krishna's opinion. And Krishna's opinion is worthy because he's the Supreme Personality of God and he's Bhagavan. I am just a tiny living entity. If I give you my opinion, that's no value. But if I repeat Krishna's statement, then I'm doing you service. And what does Krishna say in 4th chapter of Gita? Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasthena sevaya. If you want to know the truth of what I'm explaining to you in Bhagavad Gita, you must approach my representative. That's Krishna's system.
Yes, the center means Guru. That's what I thought probably.
Yes.
That whoever the representative is a guru in Indian system is termed as a guru.
Who what?
Guru.
Is
the
what?
Person who described or who is the representative of Krishna.
Yes.
He is termed as a guru. That's what I'm asking.
You can also become guru. You understand the science of Krishna and teach others, you'll be guru. Okay? Everyone can be. It's not that it's some thing that only one person can do, no one else can do, and it's inherited at birth. No, everyone here can become guru. You learn the science of Krishna and teach others, then you're a guru. What is the difficulty? First become a student, and then the student becomes the teacher. Okay? When the teacher certifies that the student is ready to be a teacher, the student becomes teacher. And then that teacher prepares other students who will become teachers in the future. And this way things go on and on. This is the spiritual enterprise. The spiritual family business. So, Srila Prabhupada passed it down to us, and then we are looking for others to pass it down to. You can do. And that way you'll do the greatest good for the world. Anything else? Yes.
After going to spiritual planet, what are the activities like? What will we do there?
There's no work. And no cricket. You still want to go? You do what you do here. The nine processes of devotional service are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Pada Sevanam, Archanam Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyam Atmanivedanam. Hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, worshipping Krishna, offering prayers to Krishna, becoming Krishna's friend, surrendering everything to Krishna, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. These are the activities of bhakti in the material world, and they go on incessantly without stop in the spiritual world. There's no matter in the spiritual world. Everything is pure spiritual consciousness. So there's no impediments to bhakti in the spiritual world. Yes, you should want to go there. And Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, once having gone there, you never return to the material world. Yes?
I have a little bit of confusion in my mind. I'm sorry to ask this question, but like, I visited a few times, few classes of Rajapita Brahma Kumaris Vishwavidyalaya. I hope you know that. Like, even they teach the same things, Bhagavad Gita, all the things, all the principles are the same.
You're sure?
Yeah, most of them are the same, but what they tell is that Lord Krishna is the superior soul, and what they preach is that there is one more superior soul, the Supreme God, superior to Lord Krishna.
Then they are deviating. This is not what is said in Bhagavad Gita. So there's a great difference. It is not the same. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Matapratanam nanya kinchidasti dhananjaya. There's nothing superior to me. Everything rests upon me like pearls are strung in a thread. So they can say whatever they like, but just don't say it's Bhagavad Gita. Call it something else. No. They should just say we're doing our own thing. That's fine. Everyone can do their own thing, but don't call it Bhagavad Gita. Just say we've made up our own way. That's honest. This is a great problem that's happened in India. So many people want to make their own opinions and call it Bhagavad Gita. That's why Srila Prabhupada gave the title Bhagavad Gita as it is, not Bhagavad Gita as we would like it to be. So whether Brahma Kumaris, this Kumaris, whatever, the whole point is, are you saying Bhagavad Gita as it is or are you not?
So they just took the principle and deviated.
They are deviated. They are not genuine. It's not that I'm saying, it's not my opinion, but based on what Krishna says, they have deviated. And they're doing a great disservice by telling people this.
It's contradicting my mind. Like.
Yes, don't waste your time. You come here, you get Bhagavad Gita straight. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, surrender to me. Now, so many speculators will say, but yes, not exactly to Krishna. Krishna's talking about something beyond him. Krishna doesn't say that. The Sanskrit is very clear, Mom, unto me. But then, because they're envious of Krishna, they say, no, no, it means to the force behind Krishna. He doesn't say that. Surrender to me, think of me. Simple English. Suppose you tell me, give the samosa to me. And I say, no, no, it's not to you, it's to the impersonal force behind you. This is deviation, it's concoction. So don't waste your time.
No, not only the time.
Yeah. Okay, you may think they're nice people, that's all right. But in terms of what is the real understanding of Vedic knowledge, they have missed the point.
That's what I want to make sure.
Yes, as soon as someone says there's something beyond Krishna, they have missed the point.
Yeah, it seemed like they were like creating imaginary something. I wanted to make it.
Yes, imagining. Yes.
Like this was a little bit clearer and precise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But Krishna also recommends other types of processes like yoga. So many of us like in having come from different backgrounds, like we've been taught yoga and stuff like that. So
Krishna, yes, he recommends yoga, bhakti yoga. What do you mean by yoga? The whole Bhagavad Gita is about yoga. There's the yoga ladder. There's karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga. And Krishna shows how all the different yogas are meant to bring you to bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is the top. So therefore at the end of the sixth chapter of Gita, what does Krishna say? Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana shadhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomata. Of all the types of yogis, the one who's always thinking of me in bhakti, rendering bhakti yoga, transcendental loving service to the Lord, that is the highest yogi. So you take the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is being patient. He's showing you how all the other forms of yoga are actually meant to culminate in bhakti. But since that's so, why not just take the culmination straight away? Why walk up 100 flights of steps when you can take the elevator straight to the top? Alright, yes.
Maharaj, as I said before, with Narayana, I just drop off whatever the karma you get, definitely get it.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to tell the new friends to come to the temple and meditate and start Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And they say everything's pretty calm, and so if I want, if it's pretty calm, I'll definitely come. If not now, so don't force me. It happened to me as well. It was my personal opinion before 4 years.
You
back.
Said that.
I said that, but honestly, because of the support of the devotees and everything, self-realization of my things happening with me, I was surrendering this by my life.
So before you did anything, you would just say, "If it's meant to happen, it's meant to happen." If it's meant to happen, I'll go to work. I'll go to work. If it's meant to happen, I go to school. I'll go to school. Is that how you did it? No, you chose. So why, when it comes to Krishna, you did this cheating? When Bhagavan wants, when he wants, then I'll go to the temple.
That's how I realized when I came to temple and started my...
Then you are fortunate because of good association. Now, please make others fortunate by your good association.
Have you heard? What if they say, like, predetermined mind and everything? And when you give the same example, and they say, it's predetermined mind, don't force me, And
then you say, just like I said to you, is that the attitude you have about going to work or going to school? Just sit back, don't do anything. Let your job come to you. Let your exams come to you. Don't go take your exam. It's all predetermined whether you'll pass or fail your exams. Don't take them. Don't be fooled by this craziness. Yes.
Maharaj, we were originally in the spiritual world, right?
Yes.
And then how did we fall into this material world?
Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Itcha Dvesha Samuttena Dvanda Mohena Bharata. All living entities have appeared in this world because of Itcha and Dvesha, desire and aversion, hatred. They desire to imitate Krishna and they hate the instructions of Krishna. For those kind of characters, welcome to the material world. Because there cannot be true love between Krishna and the living entity unless you have independence. No one wants forced love, and Krishna does not want forced love. He wants your voluntary choice. That makes the love very tasty. So therefore, if you choose not to serve Krishna, there has to be a place for you. So here it is. Now go back. Yes?
There are various species of life, like 8,200. I don't know them.
That information is given in Padma Purana, Jalaja, Navalakshani, Stavara, Lakshavimshati.
Okay, so my question is, like it says, aquatics, plants, animals. So, like, we can have any, of course, the humans are superior to them in terms of consciousness. So, how we arrange them? Like, is a plant better life than the animal one?
Fish are the lowest.
Oh. So, aquatics are the lowest?
Yes. They are least conscious. That's how the whole scale is arranged according to development of consciousness. Next, plants. Plants, trees, vegetation. And human beings, they're at the top.
The demigods, just for example.
Topmost human beings.
But we see that one big chart. Yeah, so we see on the heavenly planets as well, there are demons. So
no, they sometimes go there by some exceptional case, but they can't stay there. No, no demons on heavenly planets. No. Yes, he went there. He did not belong there. Because the demigods had made a big mistake. They offended Brihaspati. Therefore, they could conquer. The demons could conquer temporarily. They could not stay there, though. And Bali Maharaj is a special case. He's actually grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. He's a great devotee. Those are exceptions. They cannot stay there. They cause some commotion, and then they're pushed back.
Where are
demons
supposed to stay there?
Look all around. Next time you go to the center of Melbourne, what do you see? Such degradation. That's demoniac. To be demoniac doesn't mean you have horns on your head and long teeth like Rakshasa. Demoniac means demoniac behavior. But we want to save these persons. Therefore, we're trying so hard to bring them Krishna consciousness. All right, so time for some kirtan.
I'd like to make one announcement. So I would like to thank His Holiness Deyogra Swami to spend time with us on this busy schedule. We request him humbly to please again give us opportunity to give his to take his association. So thank you very much, Swami. And we also thank His Grace Gopal Guru Prabhu. He is not here. I'm sure all of you have tasted his prasadam. He has cooked for last 2 days. Very wonderful prasadam. And there he is. He's one of the managers in the temple, but he's one of the most hardworking devotees and a very humble person. So we are very kind that he offered his help for this retreat. Also, His Grace Krishna Grace Prabhu. very beautiful kirtan and a nice devotee. I was talking to Maharaj, and Maharaj was telling us that he was very pleased to have come here. And one point he mentioned was he was very happy with the quality of the audience. So we like to thank all the guests for coming and for being such an enthusiastic audience. We request you all to please come again. Because you have been such nice guests, we have gifts for each one of you. We are giving away a CD which contains 8 lectures, MP3 lectures, which covers a complete overview of the Sanatana Dharma philosophy in a very simple and a systematic way. So if you like, you can collect the CD from Koti Prabhu. And there is also a CD which contains kirtan, that's an audio format. You can put it in your car and you can listen to it. It has Srila Prabhupada's kirtans and some other kirtans. It's very nice if you can take, but they are small numbers. But lectures we have enough for everyone. Normally, beads are quite expensive compared, you know, like if you wish to buy in the temple or any other place in Melbourne. But because you came here, we wish to give you, if you like to buy beads and start chanting at in your house from today or tomorrow, you can buy it from us for a very minimal cost, say around $2. A lot of devotees have sort of sponsored so many services. They are also sponsoring this. They also sponsored some to bring the cost of the Bhagavad Gita down. So you still have option to buy the Bhagavad Gita. And please come to our Saturday students program. So we all see you next Saturday. All 70 of you. After Kirtan, we'll have some feasts on gulab jamuns.
Yeah, we're done with that.